Live from the WTAD studios in the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, it's time to pull up a chair and assemble today's WTAD News Roundtable.
Either there's a glitch in the matrix or that truck just went around the block, because I could have swore I just saw it drive by twice in about 2 minutes. It's really weird. Welcome to the Tuesday edition of News Roundtable. Sorry, stream of consciousness. Welcome inside my brain. My name is Quaid. Scott Hardy is here. Steve Bull is here. And a point of note coming up on tomorrow's News Roundtable. We will be joined by Cindy O'Loughlin, who is running to replace Senator Brian Munslinger in Missouri. And I believe Cindy O'Loughlin is going to be joining us in studio tomorrow. And then on Thursday, His Honor Mayor Kyle Moore will be joining us here in the studio out in front of Lunch with the Mayor, which is back for 2018. And he does that once a month for
3 months,
June, July, and August. So this will
be invariably one of them gets canceled because
out.
Of the way,
yeah.
Weather. Yeah,
yeah. So he'll be in studio where we have a roof, even though sometimes water does come.
Well, my tree's on that side of the table.
I've seen it happen. All right, yes. It's okay now.
We've all seen it.
I've seen it happen. So that'll be on the Thursday edition of the News Roundtable. Coming up on the back half of the show, there's an interesting follow-up to one of last week's shows about the pension issue with the police and firefighters in Harvey and the intercept law and why other municipalities, other funds aren't jumping on board with this. We say kind of Harvey has been the test case, and that's what we're witnessing, and it's interesting watching it playing out much better from this side of it than actually being in Harvey. But the question is, well, why isn't there a rush for other funds to say, okay, we see this starting to happen, we're going to make a move too? Well, Ted Dabrowski at WirePoints actually went and ask, there are 400 different funds that are way underfunded in the state. So Dabrowski took it upon himself to go seek them out and ask why. Why aren't you doing what Harvey's police and firefighters pension fund groups are doing? And the answers are kind of interesting. Some of them, I think, will probably make sense to you. Others will stop and make you go, So we'll get into that on the back half of today's news roundtable. First things first, it's 10:10, and in with all the latest news from around the tri-states, fresh from the WTAD newsroom, we say good morning to Scott Hardy.
Good morning, Quaid. Good morning, everybody. The Quincy City Council has approved a contract with a Georgia company that will soon provide the Quincy Police Department with body cams. The council last night unanimously approved a 5-year lease worth nearly $340,000 with Utility Associates of Decatur, Georgia. The company will provide the QPD with 58 body cameras and 17 in-car cameras. The body cams are modified smartphones that are able to notify staff when an officer's down and when they're in foot pursuit. QPD Chief Rob Copley was pleased with the vote.
This is something that's been a long time coming. We've been working on this project for over 2 years, trying to find the right solution for us and the community, and I believe that we did. And I'm very thankful that City Council saw that and voted to make this contract work with Body Worn.
Copley says he expects officers to be wearing the body cams by later this summer. The vote on the cams came less than a week after a Quincy police officer was cleared in the May shooting death of Raleigh Davis Sr. The inquiry said there was no available dash cam footage to review. The director of Quincy Regional Airport has decided to step down later this summer. During last night's council meeting, Director of Administrative Services Skip Bright announced that Terrence Ward's last day is tentatively set for August 15th. After the meeting, Ward touted his accomplishments, saying that both revenue and passenger counts have increased since he arrived in 2016. Ward said after the meeting that he's hoping for a smooth transition and that the city council could replace him in one of three ways.
You can become an airport authority, like one of the aldermen said, which, according to the state Supreme Court, says that's the best method to manage an airport, is create an airport authority. You can have an organization come in and manage the airport, which will give them more resources for less money. So that is also a win-win, and the city maintains control. Or you can go about having another individual come in.
Yeah, Ward had earlier alerted city officials that he could be asked to return to active duty as a pilot. City has already issued a request for proposal for an airport management company. Bright told the council that Ward's position will be posted. Creating a separate airport authority was first brought up at a recent sustainability committee meeting. Bowling Green man accused of shooting and killing his stepson last summer pleaded not guilty. Michael Allen Black entered that plea Monday at his arraignment in Pike County, Missouri Circuit Court. He faces two counts of first-degree murder, second-degree murder, and two counts of armed criminal action in the August 18, 2017 shooting death of 31-year-old Alexander Cook. According to authorities, the shooting happened while the two were talking outside their rural Bowling Green home. Earlier that night, Black and Cook got into a fight, and Black allegedly told arresting officers he was tired of being beaten by Cook and admitted shooting him once in the abdomen. Cook died about an hour later at Louisiana Hospital. Black's free on $500,000 bond. He'll be back in court June 25th. A Paris, Missouri man facing sodomy and child endangerment charges has pleaded guilty to several counts in a settlement with prosecutors. Larry Isgrig entered that plea Friday at a pretrial hearing in Monroe County Circuit Court. Two counts of second-degree statutory sodomy and one count of child endangerment. In return, a third sodomy count was dropped. Isgrig was set to have a two-day trial starting June 20th. After earlier being found fit to stand trial, he faced those charges based on incidents that happened in April 2017. Prosecutors said Isgrig was arrested after the Monroe County Sheriff's Office got a report of an alleged ongoing sexual relationship between Isgrig and a child under 17. He's in the Randolph County Jail on $100,000 bond. He'll be sentenced on August 10th. A Quincy man accused of defacing the police memorial at Quincy City Hall has decided to take a settlement with prosecutors on different charges from last year. Just before jury selection was set to begin Monday in Adams County Circuit Court, Gregory Friday decided he'd waive his right to a jury. He's facing charges of aggravated battery to a police officer, threatening a public official, and two counts of non-consensual dissemination of a sexual image. All those charges are from 2017 incidents. He's set to enter a plea on those charges July 11th. He also faces a felony count of vandalism over $500. He's accused of damaging the memorial on a Sunday morning in mid-February. That memorial was placed in May 2017 to honor the city's fallen police officers. Friday will be in court on that charge June 25th. And finally, a Hannibal man charged with several felonies after allegedly firing several shots near a Hannibal apartment Friday night will be in court later this week. A Friday arraignment date for James Tobias in Marion County Associate Court was set Monday. He's facing two counts of unlawful use of a weapon, including one count while possessing hydrocodone, possession of hydrocodone, and marijuana delivery. Prosecutors say Tobias admitted to Hannibal police he fired seven shots in the air from a .40 caliber Glock while sitting in a truck in front of an apartment on Chloe Place. Tobias said that a man at the apartment had twice broken into his home and that he went there to fight him. Officers later found Tobias, found the hydrocodone in his sock. They also later found cocaine, marijuana, and items related to drug sales at Tobias's apartment, along with several other guns, including an AK-47-style rifle, AR-15s, shotguns, and pistols, and over $25,000 in cash was also found, which prosecutors say they're going to try to confiscate and turn over to local schools. Tobias is in the Marion County Jail on $100,000 cash-only bond. That's a look at the news for you. We'll have plenty more for you throughout the afternoon, including a preview of the Adams County Board meeting coming up for you tonight. That right here on WTAD.com and on Twitter at 9:30 a.m. WTAD.
And you're looking forward to an exciting Adams County Board tonight.
They're always exciting, Quade.
All right, fine. We'll leave it there. 10:16. Thank you very much, sir.
Sarcasm.
I was serious.
And sarcasm again.
I'm on the edge of my seat at those meetings.
Then that's a threefold sarcasm.
Okay, can't wait to get out, right?
Those are small seats. In these.
When we come back, why haven't these pension funds gone after the Intercept Law more? Why is it just kind of Harvey and maybe Northern Chicago? What's going on? Ted Dabrowski went and actually asked the questions, and he shares some of the answers. We'll get into that next on the News Roundtable.
WTAD.
Welcome back to the News Roundtable. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. The topic of pension funds for policemen and firefighters is a hot topic in the state of Illinois, especially now that the budget, Adam Schuster, spending plan has been passed. Let's get back to some questions that we've had on previous shows, like, well, now that Harvey has made that move for the Intercept Law to be enacted, how come other funds from policemen or firefighters around the state haven't jumped up to get after it? We supposed that there would be a situation like that, that there would be a moment of critical mass when everybody made a move on the state to say, hey, our stuff's not being funded to the level it should be. You need to start intercepting funds from the city. And you would think that that might be the case, because right now the percentage of funds that are underfunded is way higher than those that are covering their percentage of funding. It's almost 60% in the state of Illinois that aren't funded the way they should be. There are 650 police and fire pension funds, and they're not in good shape. And that doesn't mean that they're all at Harvey level, but they're not in good shape. So the question we had was, well, how come there isn't this move towards this? Now, we have seen that the city of Harvey had to lay policemen and firefighters off. And then they had to negotiate some of that funds coming back so they could pay who they had left. We talked about that last week, that there had to be an agreement put in place for a certain percentage to go to the city so that they could, you know, pay their workers, and then other parts of it would go to the police and fire, and then the bondholders. Don't forget about them. So why haven't other trustees gone looking to put this Intercept Law in place? Ted Dabrowski at Wire Points actually went and asked about this. Because, as he cites, almost 100 of these funds have less than 40% of the money they need on hand today to pay out future benefits. So this has been a situation that you've heard pensioners or people within the system talk about for decades. Not paying into it. They're not paying into it. They're not paying into it. Well, now you have a way to force that money to be paid into it. And yet it's really not happening to the level that you think it would. So why? Dabrowski says, and I'm pulling directly from the article now at Wire Points, he says, we've talked to parties close to the decision making in some of these municipalities, and we have a list of 10 potential reasons as to why. Number one at the top of Dabrowski's list is some funds fear the city will lay off workers or cut services. Well, that's what Harvey did. And we saw, so that's a real-life example of what happens. Now, logically, it makes sense. Okay, we don't have the money to put towards these funds. If you're going to force us to do that by having the state intercept this money and set it aside, well, now we can't pay for what we have. So those people have to be laid off. It also means that you lay those people off, those pensions aren't growing for them either. So you have that. Number two on their list, some of these funds just don't have attorneys on staff to help with the process of Intercept, which is interesting. That you would have this in place but not have somebody on board who could act on behalf of you in these cases. Third on this list, some funds don't have the expertise to calculate if their city actually paid the money that it was required to. This, to me, seems very similar to number two. So, safety workers around the state, are you paying attention? Does your group, do your trustees have the people in place that they need to be able to represent you when it comes to this? Number four, funds aren't getting help from the Illinois Public Pension Fund Association. Dabrowski says, as far as they know, the IPPFA doesn't publicly advocate for garnishment or help with the process. So you have an association, a larger group, that knows that this is in place, has watched Harvey do it, has watched the consequences, and yet they're not saying it's time. Everybody should follow through like this. They're kind of sitting back, watching. I'm going to assume they're watching just like the rest of us. Number five on this list, some funds simply don't care if their city failed to pay in full. And I find that fascinating. Ignoring it. It'll be fixed or handled at some point in time. It's that point in time, employees, when you're about to get that pension. Remember what we talked about with Rhode Island. Now, granted, the laws in Rhode Island are a little different than the laws here in Illinois. But the ultimate agreement when it shook down was pensioners only ended up with 55% of their pension in Rhode Island from very similar circumstances. Like I said, the laws are different there. Who's first in line is different there legally. But when you have a situation when there's only so much money and you have a large group of people saying, that's mine, that's mine, that's mine, when all is said and done, you're going to have to divvy it up somehow, some percentage, and nobody is going to get their full amount. So I find it fascinating that nobody just cares if their city hasn't paid it in full. Now, logically, some funds have gotten full or almost full funding from their cities just by making the threat to enact the intercept for the garnishment. And those places don't want to mess up the deal that they've got in place. So I get that. That, at least, is logical to me. Number seven on Dabrowski's list, some funds don't want to garnish because some parts of the law are still kind of vague. They're unclear. And Dabrowski cites an example. Now that it's 2018, funds are unclear as to whether they can request an intercept for monies due from previous years, from 2016 or 2017. These are things I would think would have to be worked out. And maybe that's what the IPPFA is waiting on. Number eight, dozens of pension funds have been shorted by their sponsoring fire protection districts. However, those districts rely almost entirely on local property taxes. So now you have a situation, again, where there's really not money for the state controller to intercept in the first place. The whole structure of that setup was perpendicular and not going to work from the beginning. Number nine, some of the funds have different accounting calendars. Now, this I understand as well. So they can't demand garnishment for missed 2018 money until later this year. So backing it up to seven, we don't know if 2016 and 2017 are pertinent now, but we can't move until later this year. So it'll be interesting to watch, to pay attention to this particular one, to when you get to a certain point on the calendar. I don't know when that date would be, to when some of these pensioners and their trustees can actually move on this year's funding. And finally, Dabrowski says, nearly 400 pension funds were shorted in 2016, and he cites that that's the most recent year that data, comprehensive data, is available. But he says fewer pension funds could have been shorted this year due to just the threat of the garnishments being put in place. So with those 10 possibilities laid out there, some of them I get, some of them you kind of shake your head at. However, he says that either pension funds create a crisis by taking city revenues, or they create a crisis by going insolvent. Either way, we're back to that. There's a pile of money. The pie is a certain size. And if you've been promised pie plus, please know that there's no plus to the pie. And there are other people who've been promised pie plus too. So how does that get broken down? Are those negotiations going on behind the scenes? I guess only those trustees and the people at the IPPFA really know for sure. But we'll pay attention to it, as I'm sure Ted Dabrowski is on this as well at WirePoints. And we would encourage you to check out the full article at WirePoints.com. Don't forget, tomorrow, Cindy O'Loughlin joining us. She's running to replace Senator Brian Munslinger in Missouri. She'll be on tomorrow's show. And then on Thursday, Quincy Mayor Kyle Moore will join us. Thanks for being here today. We'll be back in tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. You should be too.
The News Roundtable will reconvene tomorrow morning at 10:06 a.m. on AM 930 WTAD. Podcast available online at WTAD.com.